Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, LA, appreciate you guys tuning in. Whether you're in your car right now, you're listening on the app, we greatly appreciate it, as always. Ireland was killing me right there. That was a fun game, actually. I like that, by the way. We do some of those Jeopardy questions, and Ireland's mind sometimes. I don't know how he gets some of these answers, but always fun doing the show with those guys. Okay, so just give everybody a quick idea what we got going on for the show. First things first. Looks like Meta Sandiford. I hope I'm pronouncing his wife's name the right way. He just changed his name recently. So our test coming on at 7 o'clock, and then Scott Gleason at USA Today. Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999. There is so much to get into. And I did this, and I'm glad Mario worked on this for the promo to talk about the excitement right now when it comes to sports. And a lot of that excitement was coming from yesterday when Governor Newsom here in California talked about how, hey, you know what, we might be open for business if things keep going in the trend that they're going in without fans. But starting in June, the first week of June or some point in June, you could see sports continue again in some of these facilities, stadiums. And we know what that means. That's actually something that's incredibly important for baseball specifically. That's incredibly, incredibly important for baseball. So I do want to start off the show talking baseball. There can be no excuses on not playing out the season unless it comes from health officials. So the only way baseball doesn't play this upcoming season is because it wasn't safe to play. That can be the only excuse, and that's not an excuse. That's a reality. That's something that every sport is going to have to deal with over the next couple of months, and then who knows, maybe in the fall or winter, hopefully not, there is no second wave or something along those lines that, obviously you read sometimes in some of these reports. Baseball can't screw this up. They can't. You can't screw this up if you're baseball. This is an opportunity that it's not just about baseball. It's about the country. It's about, the citizens of this country who have gone through an incredible amount over the last couple of months. The world, right? It's not just the United States that's affected by COVID-19. It's the entire world. And when I say they can't screw this up, this is what I mean. I haven't heard much from Tony Clark and the Players Association, let's say over the last week. We haven't heard all that much from Rob Manfred. Now, he was on CNN last week, and we played some of those clips. That might have been on Thursday or Friday. So, okay, maybe we've heard a little bit from Rob Manfred. Where are we with baseball right now? All I know is this, that the owners want a revenue split. The players don't want to renegotiate anything. They saw, well, we negotiated something in March. And that was already with the understanding that there's not going to be, or there's a good chance there won't be fans in the stands. And there's a very good chance this year that that's going to be the case. I mean, I don't think anybody's questioning that. We would all be shocked if we see fans at Dodger Stadium or Angel Stadium in the next 3 to 6 months. I would be shocked. I'd be shocked if that at any point this year that there's fans inside of stadiums. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope that there's some progress that's made over the next few months. And then eventually there's ideas of how to do it, how you can go. Actually, today is a great example. Today I walked into a Starbucks. I'm not going to sleep tonight. I went to Starbucks at 4:30 in the afternoon. I'd gone in the morning and then I needed another pick-me-up. So I walk into Starbucks. This was the first time I was able to actually walk into a Starbucks and order at the register. So we haven't had that before. Eventually, just kind of baby steps. We'll see if at some point, okay, now you can go into a Starbucks, but there's going to be social distancing. You can go into a restaurant, there's going to be social distancing. We have a feeling that's going to eventually happen. Let's just say that happens with sports down the road as well. But I've been painted this picture, and you guys, most people know who listen to the work that I do. NBA is my favorite sport. I don't hide it. That's kind of that one sport that I grew up absolutely loving. Now, NFL and Major League Baseball, they're very, very important sports for this country. But baseball has this, what's the term? The national pastime. This is America's game. It brings families together. You know, how many times do people tell stories? I'm sure there's people who are on the road right now listening, and they have stories about their dad taking them to a game when they were kids at, you know, Dodger Stadium. And then now they do that with their children. Or you went to those day games with the family, right? That's not uncommon when it comes to baseball. That's actually very common. And there is this there's this history that usually comes with baseball. That's really a beautiful thing. But we call it this national pastime. The history, you hear Mace talk about this a lot, how baseball has been played during these just critical moments in our country's history. We could be talking about war. We could be talking about after September 11th, that baseball has been that sport that kind of helps bring us all back together. By the way, legends in baseball who served during World War II, you're talking Ted Williams, Stan Musial, Joe DiMaggio, even had baseball players that during World War II passed away. They were baseball players at one point. They fought in the war and they passed away. Like, the history to baseball is like no history we have in this country. The reason why I set it up like that, this is not just on the players. This is not just on the owners. This is on everybody in baseball. Can you imagine if baseball got the green light? We got through these health issues and they still didn't play, and that it came down to financial decisions or financial reasons why baseball didn't play this year. It's not an okay subject to be talking about. It's not a topic where it's okay, well, let baseball figure it out. No. You have to get it figured out. I'll put it as best as I can. And I'm going to read off this tweet from John Heyman on MLB Network, said that there's two options right now for baseball. Before I do that, this is a time, you know, like no other. And this is a time where the consumer, they're paying attention. Fans out there in the sports world are paying very, very close attention. By the way, not just to sports. They're paying attention to everything going on in the world. And they're very, very on edge, I think you could say is the right way of putting it. People don't know if they're getting a check tomorrow. I don't have to go over, I mentioned this last week, the amount of people who have filed for unemployment over the last 2 months. It's a very, very difficult time for the country. Who would have thought that money could stop baseball more than this virus that's affecting the entire world? And I'm not saying that baseball is not going to eventually figure it out. What I'm saying is baseball better figure it out. There is no other option. There is no, if baseball owners and players think in their mind, well, you know what, maybe we'll just sit out this year then, and we're going to come back to the negotiating table next year. And it's not because of health reasons. That's a big time issue for the sport of baseball. I can only talk for myself, right? And I put out this tweet a little bit earlier. I put out a tweet asking listeners out there, would you continue to support baseball if they did not play this season over money? Would you continue to follow baseball, watch baseball, support baseball if there were no games, not because of COVID-19, but for financial reasons? I don't know how I can personally be more clear. I would do everything in my power not to follow the sport. I would do it only because this is my position. And, you know, obviously out of respect to my job, I would follow Dodgers baseball. I would follow anything I need to follow when it comes to Angels baseball. I'd make sure that I'm up to speed on everything. And this is the first time that I have a role in a gig where it's not just NBA. It's my job to make sure that I'm following everything. With that in mind, and with that said, if you told me baseball didn't play this year, and it wasn't because of the health issues, it was because they couldn't figure out how to make it happen financially. I cannot tell you how bitter of a fan I would be. I would bring it up all the time too, from a sports talk radio perspective, and having the privilege to have a microphone in front of me on a night in, night out basis. I would make sure that that's not forgotten. Remember that year that baseball could have done this, but instead they went this way? Remember that year that it wasn't COVID-19 that stopped Major League Baseball, was actually greed. I mean, it would be an awful, awful scenario for baseball, because I don't feel like I'm the only one that feels that way. I definitely don't feel, and that's coming from someone, like I mentioned, I didn't grow up with baseball being my go-to sport. I didn't grow up playing baseball. I didn't grow up with my dad taking me to games. Like, I didn't grow up with that. I grew up with the NBA. I grew up that passion that I have that, you know, I think is a big reason why I sit in this seat today. It's because my passion for Lakers basketball. And for those that maybe take Dodgers and baseball is as big of a sport to them as the NBA is, I can only imagine what they're thinking in their head if baseball didn't play this year because of these reasons under these circumstances. Let me read off this tweet real quick. John Heyman from MLB Network. MLB in recent talks gave the union two options. One, negotiate a new financial arrangement, something other than prorated pay for players playing games with no fans in attendance. Or two, wait until the coronavirus is clear to the point where fans can attend games. Okay, let's go over these two options. If these are the two options that we have here, if these are the two options, it's going to be one or the other. You're either going to play baseball this year based upon renegotiating the terms, or two, you're just not going to play baseball. Let's do this. When we come back, I'm going to give what number two, what that exactly means between those two options, because it's not about just saying, well, we're just going to wait till fans are able to come back, because there's something very, very important that those fans, I don't think that they're paying attention to right now. We come back, we'll talk about it. By the way, you want to be a part of the show, 877-710-ESPN. Would you continue to support baseball if they did not play this season over money? This is the Sliwa Show on 710-ESPN. All right, but before we go any further, fellas, how you guys doing? We got Jesse, we got Curtis. Curtis back in the house. Curtis, how you feeling over there?
Better now that I'm, you know, doing my thing. It feels a little better to be doing that. So
back in your routine. Jess was holding it down for the last couple of days. Jess, what's going on with you?
It feels really weird to say that it's back to normal, and yet I'm in my house and we're still doing the show from our each individual houses. But hey, look, we're back to normal. Everything's fine in the meantime.
Get comfortable. I don't know if we'll be going back into a studio anytime soon. But okay, so let me continue on this rant here. So John Heyman, MLB Network, you could hit me at Alan Sliwa. Question I threw out there, would you continue to support baseball if they did not play this season over money? So Heyman says that MLB recent talks, they gave the union two options. One, negotiate a new financial arrangement. Or two, wait until the coronavirus is clear to the point where fans can attend games. Okay. So option number one is negotiate a new financial arrangement and play baseball. That's assuming everything passes from a health perspective. Option number two, I want to read, because there's a word in there for option number two that stands out to me very, very clear. Wait until the coronavirus is clear to the point where fans can attend games. Wait until fans are able to come back to games. I'm sorry. If you don't play a season, when you're allowed to play a season, you're going to tell me that there'll be a fan base when you come back? I mean, maybe I'm missing something. But I saw last week you had a couple players complaining about money. Blake Snell, that's the conversation we had on Ace Pitcher from Tampa Bay, right? That was one of the arguments that I think was on Friday. Everybody in sports was running with that one. Wait, Snell, what are you saying? And by the way, there were players like Bryce Harper that knew, understood where he was coming from. No. They're supporting him. I appreciate him saying it. We're thinking it, but he said it. That immediately leaves a taste in a fan's mind that, okay, so is it about the health or is it about the money? And I'm not saying that it can't be about both. But if you get more money, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, I'm good now. I'm going to go play. The difference between $7 million or $3 million or whatever those finances look like. I could just tell you this, and I'll read off a couple tweets that I got. I could just tell you from my perspective. I will do the least amount possible because it's my job, but I will always bring this monumental moment in sports history up if Major League Baseball does not find a way to play out this year. If it comes down to health, I'm completely okay. Of course, you shouldn't play if you're not healthy, if it's not the right thing to do. But if it came down to finances and the two sides couldn't figure it out, that's a monumental problem for baseball. Monumental problem for baseball. Yesterday, you guys heard with the open with Mario. Yesterday, I started off the show. I was talking about how excited I was. Wait a minute. What did Governor Newsom say? What did Governor Cuomo say from New York? That the governors of New York and California say they would welcome the return of pro sports without fans next month as early as the first week of June. I started getting excited, saying to myself, okay, you know what? I don't think I've ever felt this optimistic about sports, because it's one thing to get it from some of these, you know, Jeff Passan to say something, or Bob Nightingale to throw something in, Buster Olney, some of these great, great reporters for Major League Baseball. It's completely different when you have a governor of the state that's coming out and saying, I think if we keep progressing the way we are, we can have sports back in some of these stadiums without fans. I don't even think there's pressure on baseball. It's literally, there is no pressure on baseball. Figure it out. Don't be idiots. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. Do not be, if you are that sport that doesn't play this year under these circumstances, under this time, and you're supposed to be America's national pastime, and it's all about baseball and peanuts and Cracker Jacks and everybody enjoying these day games, and you're the sport that doesn't come back because of financial disputes between the union and the players, this isn't the strike in 1994. This is completely different. This is much bigger than the strike in 1994. This is Major League Baseball's chance. It's literally right now. Do not allow greed to win this battle, because if greed wins this battle, I don't think there's going to be, oh, well, baseball will recover. How are you going to recover? You're going to do another Sosa and Maguire, everybody takes steroids and hit 60-plus jacks to try and get fans back? We already know the black eye that's on baseball from 2017, and that's just obviously in the last couple of years, and Dodger fans obviously know that especially. You could not have a worse look if you don't figure it out. I'm confident they're going to figure it out. You want to know why I'm confident they're going to figure it out? They cannot be that stupid not to figure it out. Buster Olney was on with Chris Carlin on ESPN New York a little bit earlier today. This is the bad public perception is causing pressure from both sides to come to terms. Here's Buster Olney.
I really believe that part of what hurt them, their bargaining position in terms of work, making sure that they work something out, is the fact that it's been so public. Because, as you know, there's now this narrative that sort of developed that the holdup is over money. And if baseball were to not come back with a perception among a lot of fans that the holdup is money, at a time when more than 30 million people have lost their jobs and families have lost so much, that would be crushing. And just in talking with sources on both sides, they acknowledge now that there's that pressure from comments made like Blake Snell that are in the background. Now, I do believe that in the moment, because the owners probably, in the big scheme of things, need baseball to come back more than the players do. I feel like that the Player Association has some unique leverage in this moment. And if I were sitting in Tony Clark's shoes, I'd explore the idea of parlaying that leverage into a longer-term collective bargaining agreement and address issues like free agency and tanking and service time manipulation for players. But to this point, we don't have any indication that they're looking to do that.
Robert Ercoli on Twitter, not sure if this is spot on, kind of a raw thought, but sports right now could be an incredible public service that just bring people joy and hope. Baseball players not playing due to financial reasons would be selfish and disappointing. This is a phenomenal time for baseball to reach more people, especially younger fans. This has to be about the fans and the history of the game, not dollars. All right. Steve Lomax, no. And he's talking about if he would still support baseball. Just reading off some tweets here. No, they would be doing long-term permanent damage if that's the reason they didn't play this year. And I'm not putting this all on definitely not putting this all on the players. But you got to figure this out. You know when people say, I don't want any excuses. There's certain times in life where somebody can be making an excuse about something, or even yourself, you're making an excuse. Find a way to get it done. There's no need to hear from any more of the players. There's no need to hear any more from the commissioner. There's no need to hear any more from the agents. Find a way to get it done. Find a way to get it done. One more clip I want to play from Buster Olney, who was on with Chris Carlin on ESPN New York's 98.7. Here's Olney talking about if the players and owners can't get a deal done with MLB, they might lose a generation of fans.
And in recent years, there's been a lot of conversation about how baseball needs to appeal to the younger demographics. You know, people like my 15-year-old son, who's a crazy sports fan, but doesn't like to watch baseball games from beginning to end. If they don't get a deal done, then I really feel like that they're going to lose many in the generations older than my son who will never forgive them. Look, there were a lot of fans, you'll remember, after the 94-95 strike, there were fans that didn't come back and watch the game, some for a lot of years, some never came back. The franchise in Montreal basically went away because of the player strike. There is fear among people in baseball that if this the financial devastation is great, that baseball might have to talk about contraction because of the hit that some of these teams are going to take. And to think that that might happen because the two sides can't agree on the money, I agree with you. It's so unthinkable that I do feel like that's the pressure riding on the shoulders of the owners and the players at the moment.
You know, I'll go back to this, and I appreciate Jess and Chris cutting those up. That just aired probably, you know, within the last hour on ESPN in New York, and Buster Olney is as good as it gets. I don't feel like there is pressure. Like, I really don't. I don't feel like there's pressure between the players and the owners. Why would there be pressure when you know you have to get it done? There is no option of not playing this year if you're allowed to play. There is no. I mentioned this, I think it was on Friday. I spent a lot of time on this. That the leadership and the trust that the NBA has with Adam Silver. Maybe I pump up Adam Silver too much. Maybe I pump up the NBA too much. But I genuinely believe this. I believe there's a trust, and I believe there is an understanding. I believe that the commissioner, Adam Silver, definitely gets the thoughts of the players. I feel that in the NBA. I don't feel that in Major League Baseball. So when I say I don't think there's pressure, because you just literally cannot be that blind at a time like this to think, okay, well, if we didn't play this year, and you know what, let's wait till next season, and then we're going to get fans back, and yeah, we're going to show those players. Or those players saying, we're going to show those owners. And it's coming down from a financial perspective. Man, I cannot tell you that, at least from a personal perspective, you have lost the fan out of me. Jesse, am I crazy here? I mean, I know you're a huge Dodger fan, and I know it's, you know, you don't want to point the finger at your team. You want to point the finger at the league, but this cannot happen under any scenario.
No, it just can't. Just too much on the line, and it's something like this. It's so hard just because there is, you know, it's such a unique circumstance. There's so many different things, but like, come on, it's you have such a great opportunity to do
unbelievable
something.
Opportunity. Unbelievable, yeah. Opportunity.
And
that's
if
bigger,
like,
than the game.
Yeah, that's bigger than the game, bigger than the money, and yeah, it's gonna suck probably, and you're probably gonna take a hit, but you're gonna be remembered. You're gonna be known as, you know what, this is a group of people that came together when we as a nation were down and did the right thing.
And did the right thing. Well, I was heated, and then I hear all those birds in the background, Jess. I feel better now. I feel better now.
I think my girlfriend's watching some Disney movie, so I'm pretty sure that's where it's coming from.
No, it sounds peaceful.
Whistling,
man.
While you work.
Read off, yep. Yeah, there you go. I'm gonna read off one more quick tweet here. Edward Lopez at EvoBoy316. No way. I love baseball, but come on. I'm a frontline worker working two jobs, taking double hit of exposure. I make peanuts compared to these athletes. Athletes, please give me a break. If that right there does not sum up to baseball, what Tony Clark, what the Players Association, what Rob Manfred, that's the tweet that you want to read. That's the tweet that's going to stand out when it comes to how fans will look at your sport if you don't play this year. All right, we got Meta. Big time, as big as it gets, big time moment in Los Angeles Lakers history. Back in 2010, Lakers versus the Celtics. Meta Sandiford, our test is coming up next. He recently changed his name, took his wife's name, actually, put that into the mix there. He's coming up next on the Sliwa Show. Appreciate you guys all tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your wife when you forget your keys at work.
Hey, hon, you get my texts? I am looking for the spare house key. Maybe I can get through the window. Turns out the alarm works. Wow, it works fast. You should probably call me back.
GEICO, always there for you, with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
You know, I actually can't tell you how much I enjoy talking on the baseball side of things, simply because I have this curiosity of what's going to happen. You know, and I also know, too, listen, there's Los Angeles is made up with such passionate Dodger fans. So obviously that's going to be a big part of the show when we do get baseball back. But for the time being, there's no reason to be talking X's and O's. There's no reason to be talking there's no reason to be talking about anything other than if we think the sports are going to come back. With the Lakers, we can make that we can have that conversation about the Lakers where we say, okay, if the NBA does come back, Lakers were already 63 games in. What would it look like for the Lakers? What are going to be some of the biggest challenges? Can they continue where they left off? What teams are going to benefit the most off of this break? We could do that. Even, by the way, not just what not just what teams, but what players would benefit from just the stoppage of time because of their age or whatever the case is, or injuries. Baseball, it's a different topic. It's a different conversation. So every time I, you know, and this was one of those things today. It's not like anything came out today on baseball where I'm like, oh, perfect, I'm going to hit on this. No, I'm just saying in my mind, I know last week this was a hot topic. It was a hot conversation. Okay, well, where are we at now? What's the update? What's the latest on Major League Baseball? And that's why when I bring that topic up, and it is kind of comical because I was curious to see a lot of the followers I have on Twitter. Many of them follow me because of, you know, I cover the Los Angeles Lakers. I'll read off a tweet, at Lakers Rebuilt. Nope, plus no repercussions for cheating. America's pastime will be just that, America's past. And he's obviously talking about baseball. I honestly don't care. This is Chick 989, whatever that is. I honestly don't care much about baseball anymore. MLB is a great league for cheaters. This is how people feel about baseball. And this is me. Like I said, I got, you know, most of those who follow me on Twitter, they're following me for basketball. And I'm just now starting to put in, okay, here's a Rams conversation or a Rams topic. This is a Chargers topic. This is something on Dodgers or baseball. All I simply put out there is, would you still support baseball if they did not play the season over financial disputes? 90% of the people here, not 100%, are saying, no, why would I follow a sport that I don't trust, that I don't believe in, or that I don't think it has the best interest of the consumer? Okay, I get that. I definitely get that. And I don't blame that person by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, I want to get into a topic. I'm going to switch gears here for a second. We are, by the way, I'll keep you guys posted. We're working on getting Meta on the show, so we'll keep everybody posted on that front. So LeBron James was on Uninterrupted. And there's been incredible amount of chatter. Later in the show, I'm going to talk about Horace Grant's comments on Michael Jordan in The Last Dance. And let's not get this twisted. I think the more that I watch this documentary, the more obviously we're just getting Michael Jordan's perspective. Michael Jordan wasn't the producer, the director of this docuseries, this 10-part docuseries. But of course, this was all kind of driven, the opinion was driven on Michael Jordan's side. And I'll be curious, you know, me personally, if there's going to be more players or more ex-athletes that come out the way Horace Grant came out today and says that's a bunch of BS what Jordan said about this or what Jordan said about that. But before I do that, I do want to go to LeBron James, who was on Uninterrupted, and he's talking specifically the impact Jordan's first retirement had on him.
Michael Jordan was kind of like that God. He was that angel sent from heaven that I kind of used him to help me get through some of the darkest days that I had. Even at people say, well, you're only 9 years old, but you know, there's a lot of dark days, you know, when you grow up the way I grew up and you're part of a single parent household. So every other day, if I got an opportunity on WGN to watch Mike, it gave me another boost of life. You know, it made me feel that I can make it out of this situation. And when he decided to, you know, give it up after winning that third title versus Phoenix, I felt like, what can I do? I don't know what to do. And I'm losing words right now thinking about it again. It's kind of resurfacing me as a 9 year old. I'm like, okay, without Mike, what do I do now? Who's going to be my inspiration? And that brought tears to my eyes.
877-710-ESPN if you want to be a part of the show. So I'm gonna stick on this for a quick second. And that's how some of the greats felt, right? Like, we look at Michael Jordan and we look back at that time where Jordan was dominating the league. What do you mean Jordan's leaving? What are you talking about? He's going to go play baseball. This was his first retirement. Even his second retirement, everybody's like, Jordan, you're 6-0 in the finals. Where are you going? Impossible for you to leave. That's from a fan perspective. How about LeBron's perspective? LeBron James, who you heard Ireland saying, yeah, I got LeBron 1 or 2 all-time great. Yesterday or last week I was doing my rankings. I think Michael Thompson had him at number 4. There's nobody who doesn't have him in their Mount Rushmore in their top 5, but this is LeBron James. You forget how much these superstars like Michael Jordan impacted these other players. Kobe Bryant's DNA felt like it was coming from Michael Jordan. Okay, we'll wait. We're actually looks like we got Meta. All right, Meta, thank you for joining the show. This is the Sliwa Show. I appreciate you taking the time. I want to make sure that I pronounce the new name properly. Meta Sandiford Artest. Am I pronouncing it the right way?
Well, I'm still going by Meta World Peace, but legally my name is Meta Sandiford Artest. That's the correct way.
All right. Hey, how are you doing? Thank you for joining the show. By the way, give us a little update on life. How's your day to day going? How are you doing just in general?
Yeah, everything is great, man. You know, it's just obviously, getting over the quarantine, that has been a big focus, and just figuring out how we're going to get back into the society. I feel like things are going to be a little bit different off the bat. But other than that, things as well. I'm happy that people are trying to get sports back on. I miss sports on TV.
You know, Meta, actually, that's since you retired, Were you watching a lot of basketball, or did you get away? Did you kind of say, you know what, I've done this for so long, it's kind of nice to also get away from the game? How have you been consuming basketball? Yeah.
I'm into it, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. I love basketball. It's really cool seeing, you know, players, up-and-coming stars, you know, and different things like that, and to see the type, the style, you know, how Giannis plays and how, you know, Jamal Crawford is still playing. I just really enjoy the games, and, you know, the regular season is all for home court advantage. Hmm. You know, it's just stuff like that is just amazing.
Meta, who are there some players? I know you named off Giannis right there, but who are some of the younger players that you admire watching that you feel like, man, this guy's got a ton of potential, or you just enjoy kicking back and saying, this guy understands the game? Are there some players that jump into mind, maybe some of the younger players in the league right now?
Yeah, well I think some of the players that I like, I'm kind of into the Lakers because it's a historic time right now. Being LeBron career is almost over. Anthony Davis doesn't have a title. So, you know, I'm really into that right now. And then in terms of the other players, Kawhi Leonard is just really impressive. Which is really cool to see, you know, and yeah, and I'm into the future. I think it's great. I think there's a lot of basketball being played. The sport is bigger than ever right now. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much great things going on in basketball.
Meta, you mentioned Anthony Davis. What do you expect from AD? 26 years old, probably was on pace to win Defensive Player of the Year this year. You know, obviously he's got an incredible, incredible future. But from a playoff perspective, this would have been his best chance to compete for an NBA championship. When you look at Anthony Davis, where do you expect to see him over the next 5 years or so?
I think over the next 5 years, entering Hall of Fame status, I didn't realize how good he was, smart, and, you know, because when I was playing, I was just more wanting to practice myself. I didn't pay a lot of attention. He's just really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I didn't realize he was that good. He's so good. So, sky's the limit, definitely.
If we get that, you know, if we're fortunate enough to get basketball back, and they get a chance to kind of close out this season, what do you think of? Is there a team that you would say is your favorite to win it all if they do come back? And I know there's been a lot of conversation. You know, Clippers, Lakers, and the Milwaukee Bucks. All three of these teams were having incredible seasons. Did you think one of those three teams had an edge over the other, or do you think it's really just kind of a toss up?
I just gave it to the Lakers because they have the experience. I feel like if Giannis was to get to the finals, I felt like it'd be his first time. So mm-hmm. Not everyone wins on their first time to the finals, especially like great players, you know. So I think that's why I gave the edge to the Lakers.
Joined by Meta World Peace on 710 ESPN. Meta, it was a great 5 weeks of getting a chance to watch this Last Dance documentary. Was it one of those must-see things for you? Every Sunday night you were sitting down for 2 hours and getting a chance to kind of watch that run of the Chicago Bulls. Did you spend a lot of time on the documentary?
The Last Dance is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and even more than The Last Dance, the Dennis Rodman documentary, 30 for 30. That's amazing. And then the Dennis Rodman story on The Last Dance. Mm. That's so impressive. Everything Dennis Rodman, obviously the great Michael Jordan. It's amazing, obviously. But wow, Dennis Rodman just stands out to me. He was a rock star. He was a superstar. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing player. He's a winner. He's so impressive, man. So impressive.
Meta, he said something recently that I think he was talking about Pippen, and he said that he wished Pippen just didn't care about what people said, because that was kind of that was Dennis Rodman, right? He didn't care what you said. He didn't care what you thought about him. Dennis would not just go out there and beat to his own drum, but at the same time, he delivered every time he was on the court. Some of my favorite moments of the entire documentary was on Dennis. I mean, the Vegas story is hilarious, where Phil is trying to tell Michael Jordan, you know, we got to let this guy go to Vegas for a couple days. But it seems like Meta, at the end of the day, what he needed to do on the court, he did all. He always performed on the court.
Always perform on the court. You know, and he's a smart player. But when you look at his story, his dad left at 3 years old. Mm. Then he was homeless after he got kicked out. Went to jail for working at the airport stealing watches. You know, then grew up with a white family, where it was a culture shock to him, which I never knew. And then left on bad terms. And then, you know, gets to Detroit. And Detroit, you know, they split up, and people just continuously leaving out of his life. He needed somebody to love and to ride the wave. And I could imagine how he feels, you know, to this day. And even when he went to college, if you see the clip on his documentary, when the teacher was, or whoever it was, trying to get into the room, that was real footage. You know, this guy, he's such a warm-hearted person. His incidences that he had, that was physical, you know, when he kicked the cameraman, you know, I felt bad for the cameraman, you know? So, I mean, there's times where, you know, like myself, I got into trouble and I did things that I felt bad for, you know, and as a fan of Dennis Rodman, you know, there were some things obviously he could have done different, but his personality and his color, even when he married himself, I was so amazed by that. I was so amazed as a kid. I was like, you know, so I can speak about Dennis all day. I'm a huge fan.
Meta, were you a big fan of Rodman while he was still playing, or did your appreciation grow, you know, later on in your life or in your career, or you were always a big fan even back in the days when he was playing and having success in the NBA?
While he was playing, when he got on the Bulls, I didn't watch a lot of basketball as a kid, so I don't even remember Rodman as a Piston.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. I don't even remember who he was. You know, and I just remember him as a Bull. I mean, and then, definitely the Spurs. I remember he had the hair. But I wasn't really paying attention, you know, like that. But when he was on the Bulls, that's when I really started paying attention. And then when I watch him play, I'm like, wow. Man, this guy is a hustler. And I'm like, he's winning games like that. So I started to kind of play like that. And my sophomore year in high school, if you look at my stats when I played with Shamgar Wills, you know, it was all like 20 rebounds, 15 rebounds, and like 2 points. You know, it was all that style. Like Rodman inspired me.
Meta, what did you think of his connection with Phil? I thought they had, you know, just a unbelievable understanding, an unbelievable relationship. And I ask you that question because you obviously got a chance to spend time and win a championship with Phil Jackson. What do you think of their relationship? And maybe you can let us into just how special Phil was as a coach.
I think, you know, Phil is a really centered person. And he understands how to work with egos. He's coaching more than the game. He really cares about your, you know, how you feel. You know, he's doing his job well, which is the triangle. But, you know, for him to bring meditation into the facilities, that's amazing. That's a tool that people need, that people don't have, you know, and you got to respect him for bringing a non-biased, you know, faith, you know, and spirit to the game, to the locker room, right? So Rodman needed that, because even though Rodman's probably not going to have dinner at Phil's house, but you know, when he comes into his workplace, he needed to be relaxed. Life is crazy, and even if you know you don't, even if you're just a regular normal person, sometimes you want to be centered. So, Phil just hit it perfectly, you know, in the hole. I changed my name to Meta. I'm into Buddhism, and you know, I had my issues, and I found Buddhism, and I love it. And you know, so that's Phil Jackson for you. It's great.
By the way, Matt, I can't tell you how much I love, like, you know, you're saying the story when you reference Dennis Rodman and you say just kind of look at the path that he took. I don't know all your personal stories and everything else, but seeing your evolution in the game of who you are today and kind of your journey, it's a very, very unique journey. You're definitely one of those players in the league that it's an amazing story. It really is. And I don't know how much you pay attention to that or you don't, but it really is a fascinating, fascinating journey. And to kind of see where you are today, it's I think a lot of people have a lot of respect for where you sit today.
Man, thank you, man. You know, it's been a journey, and you know what? It's good. It's good. It's like, as a child, you don't know that life happens. You don't think that things happen. You know what I'm saying? And you find out quick when you become older. You know, and then you find out quick that there's different eras and evolutions. It's like sometimes the world like almost starts over. You look at Dennis Rodman, look at Mike Tyson,
mm-hmm.
right? Like look at Mike Tyson, right? And that's the world for you. That's the earth, man. It just evolves, new breath, you know, and it takes time, you know, for things to change in your life personally, no matter where you're at. And people respect that. You know, and I respect it. That's why when I see people get into issues, I'm like, it'll pass. And I'm always quick to reach out because I'm just like, you know, this is life.
mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen so many things happen. But yeah, it's good. All positive.
Meta World Peace joining the Sliwa Show. Meta, I'm curious. You know, when you look at your career and the success that you had with the Lakers, and obviously specifically 2010, do you look back at that championship a lot? Do you look back at that, you know, Game 7 moment? Do you look back at your time with Kobe? Do you look back at your time with Powell? Do you spend a lot of time reflecting? I mean, that championship meant so much to Laker fans. And obviously, you know, your shot is one of the most clutch shots in Lakers history. Do you spend time looking back and just kind of, wow, that what a journey that was, my time with the Lakers and being in one of the most important moments in Lakers history?
It was amazing. I'm so blessed. I don't know. Like, so I want to paint my picture one day really well in video. But when you look at my career, man, I mean, I'm so lucky that a kid that I had a dream was able to make, you know, to make his dreams come true through all the pressure and all the uncertainty and unpredictable circumstances in my neighborhood, my environment. But I did it. So, you know, when I look at my 23, my Defensive Player of the Year award. Mm-hmm. So the year prior to that, I was getting a lot of flagrant fouls. I was one of the bad boys in the NBA right before I got the award. So I feel like that year, if I was a good boy, like I should have been, I probably would have got that award. And then the year I got suspended, mm-hmm. that was probably going to be Defensive Player of the Year number two. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and that's not to count the second All-Star game that would have been. I only been in one All-Star game. So I look at all that, and I just say, you know, that adds to your legacy. I'm trying to get into Hall of Fame now, but with two Defensive Player of the Year awards, that probably gets you there, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then now you fast forward to the Lakers, it's like I already messed up in between that time. You know, and then when I got Defensive Player of the Year, I was number six in MVP voting, which that's not a big stat, but for me it is.
That's,
you
know, huge.
For me, I'm like, oh, wow, that's huge, right? So I'm like, mm-hmm. I finished number six. So I was averaging 18 points. And then the next year, I come back averaging 24. I come back averaging 24. And the best, you know, defensive player still in the league. I'm like, six more points? That's probably MVP, right? If we finish off. And that window of opportunity to get an MVP is small. It is extremely hard to get. But sometimes it can make a run. You see Westbrook, Harden, these guys making a run for it, but you got to be sustainable. These guys are great for long periods of time. I was great for a year, you know, mentally. And then to be successful in sports, it's 80% mental. You know, you got to be sharp. And those be the difference between great players and then just solid players, you know, like myself.
Well, you know, Meta, you found a way to obviously carve your niche in the league. And like I mentioned, I mean, in 2010, I can't tell you how many times getting an opportunity to do the pregame, the postgame show, or do Lakers talk every Monday, just get an opportunity to talk to Laker fans. Like that 2010 comes up all the time. Your shot comes up all the time. Sasha's two free throws in the clutch, you know, come up all the time. And you know, obviously, Powell and Kobe, just this incredible duo. I'll ask you about this, and I know this is a tough one. It's a tough one for everybody, but how should people remember Kobe Bryant?
Well, you know, I don't really know how people should remember him, quite honestly, because the only time I think about how people should remember him is when I, like, watch news, big topics on certain incidences that happen. So then I start thinking about...
All right, we lost Meta right there. Man, that was not the time to lose Meta. Let's see if we can get him back on the line. We'll continue this conversation. Couple things left for Meta, and also want to help him promote X versus X Sports app. So we'll wait for Meta to call back. Let's take a quick commercial break right now. I appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll try and get Meta back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, want to welcome back Meta World Peace. Nice enough to join the Sliwa Show. Meta, thanks for calling back in, man. Thank you for doing that. I think the line had cut off, so thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, the phone just cut off, but absolutely.
So the question that we were at, I know you were starting your answer. I mentioned to you, how should people remember Kobe Bryant? And you were starting to go into it. I'll let you continue.
Yeah, well, I think, like, people should remember Kobe Well, like I said, I don't know how people should remember him. I know how I remember him, you know, as someone who was just, you know, always trying to be best and to be the best father and to be the best basketball player and the best person you could be. Obviously, you know, but I'm a man of mistakes, right? So I don't, you know, to me, it's just, you know, things happen in life. And you just always try to improve. You try to learn, you know, and that's it, you know. You know, it's just people are, you know, just not perfect. And if you look at every genre or, you know, situation, whether it's a pro player or a doctor, you know, people are making big mistakes. You know, so just try to, you know, always try to bounce back. That's the key to life. That's the key to life. Always try to bounce back. But, yeah.
Meta World Peace joined in the Sliwa show. Meta, as we look back, and I'm always curious to, you know, get your take, your opinion on certain players that are out there. There's a great story, and I think it was about maybe a week, 2 weeks ago, you talked about guarding Michael Jordan and not knowing that in one of your defensive positions, you cracked one of his ribs. Am I right? Do I got that story accurate there?
Well, that story is not a story I put out there. So when it happened, you know, I knew that it happened. I knew that something bad happened when we was playing. We was playing extremely aggressive. You know what I'm saying? And but then the first story that got out there was that me and Mike had a fight, and I broke Michael Jordan's ribs in the fight. Like, I'm like, who puts a story out there like that? So that killed me, and I stayed home for about 2 days. And then Michael called me because I wasn't coming to the gym, and Michael was like, he wanted to make sure I was okay. I was really sad. Because Michael is my favorite player, you know, he's, I mean, Rodman, Michael, they're like gods, right? So when that happened, I remember being like sick. And then Mike called me and said, it's okay, things happen. But on the possession, you know, in that camp, Michael was amazing. Remember, Michael came back that first year, he averaged 25. That was the year I broke his ribs by mistake. So he was out for like 2-3 months. He had to heal. He wasn't really playing. Right, but I thought he would average 35 if that didn't happen to him. Y'all should have seen how he looked. LeBron, a baby LeBron was there. LeBron was playing well at a 16 years old, just playing well. And it was, you know, so that's what happened. Me and Mike is aggressive. You know, I was one, and he always asked me, he said, and I was a young kid, he was like, hey, make sure you come back. Make sure you come back. Because I was the only one, you know, a lot of all-stars there, but I was in his area. You understand? Like, y'all know, yo, I brought it and he liked it. And in that possession, I was denying him and he was holding me. So the thing is with Michael, you can't let Michael get the ball. If you let Michael get the ball, he gonna score. So I'm trying to do everything I can to denying the denying him hard. And then the referee called the offensive foul on him. You know, so because Mike had refereed at the runs. So the referee actually called the offensive foul. But I didn't let him hold me. I moved his arm out the way, you know. And then my elbow hit him in the ribs. But it wasn't, like, intentional. But, you know, I love Mike, man. I wore his sneakers against him, which was the amazing. I also wore number 23 because of him and got Defensive Player of the Year in his number. I'm just happy, man. I'm Michael Jordan. At 23, because that was my favorite player as a kid.
Meta, the reason why I asked the question, it was more because I was curious in your career. Look, you're known as, you know, one of the great defenders that the game has seen, and it's kind of funny because there's the beauty on the offensive side. And then there's this incredible beauty to the defensive side. And from a, just kind of a fan personally, I loved watching your game because of that, right? You're going up against the greatest offensive players in the league, in the world, and your job's to try and stop them. Is there a player or two that stands out to you that, was just such a challenge every time you had to face that player when it came to guarding them?
You know, Durant, Kobe. Durant, when I caught in the playoffs in 2010, he was very talented. But I was able to beat him to the spots when he needed to score. You know what I'm saying? When he needed to score. And then when he got older, he got smarter. You know, so I caught him at a good time. But I remember him being really tough to guard. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you had obviously LeBron. He's been so successful against me. I mean, the guy, you know, I wasn't really prepared for that one. But I had a few good games against LeBron. But LeBron's a great player. He's a great team player. He's smart. So it's going to be as hard to stop him. You know what I'm saying? So, and then Kobe, I had some good ones. So I look forward to playing against all these guys. You know, you got T-Mac is a Hall of Famer, Vince Carter. You know, in that era, you know, you had a Bruce Bowen, but in the era, you know, I'm honored to be considered one of the best at doing what he did. Hmm. You know, I never really had issues with anybody. You know, people score. It happens. But in terms of, like, you know, you're coming up against me tonight, you can't bring your B game and play against me. You bring your B game, mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a problem.
Meta World Peace joining the Sliwa Show. I love the way you explain it, too. And you know, that's kind of when you name off those players, you know, obviously KD, just simply Michael Thompson, who you know, obviously, does the color for the Lakers and back in the days, obviously, playing for the Lakers and winning championships, says that KD is just arguably the most gifted offensive player he's ever seen. Oh, and just because it's so effortless, right? But someone like you getting right up in him, I'm sure in 2010, KD was like, what the hell? You know, who's this guy? Like,
No question. Ask Dwayne Wade said in this little doc that the Indiana series was the one that made him think about things. And there was only one person that was there, you know, I was there. but the thing is this, like, the reason I love that, because I don't have, like, awards, right, because of my career. I don't have, people got awards, so it's like, it's easy for some people to not talk about the past NBA players because they got the awards. That's amazing. I don't have those, so I'm always trying to find something that I could hold on to, which is the memories. You know,
and the players know.
Like to share memories. Yeah.
And the players know. You know, I'm sure you have an incredible respect from some of those players. Okay. One more question I want to ask you, and then I also want to talk to you about your app that you're representing. So one more question on I want to go back, and I'm just out of curiosity. Do you have a relationship after everything that happened in Indiana with the Pistons? Do you have a relationship with Ben Wallace?
No, I mean, I see Richard Hamilton, Chauncey Billups. Mm-hmm. I played with Chauncey Billups I think the Big Three. You get a Big Three?
Yeah.
I've seen these guys out. I mean, it's like, they know when we played, you know, I was a little bit aggressive and it was an issue all the time. But, you know, I mean, you get off when you're done playing, I don't have any issues with anybody.
Of course. Like, of course. Mm-hmm. And I know that was a time in the game where it's all on the court and that's it. Okay, so X versus X Sports app. Can you tell us a little bit about it, Meta? For those who don't know, what is X versus X Sports app? And for those who are hearing about it for the first time.
Yeah, well, right now we want to help people that can't find basketball games find basketball games. And we have geofencing in the app. We try to help you at your skill level find a game. And we have a fencing map where, you know, you can try to find games 10 miles out or 15-mile radius or 5-mile or 100-mile radius. Right now, people need to find basketball, and all the states are not open right now. Mm-hmm. So you need VersaXSports.com, that's VSXSports.com. And then, you know, you're just registered. And it's an application for basketball players. And we also have a feed so you can connect and post videos of your games and your experiences. It's all sports.
When games start coming back and some of these gyms start opening, is the best way to explain it is, like you said, it's kind of geo-targeted. So they're going to know what area of LA you're in, for example. You can find rec games, you can find pro and semi-pro runs,
college level runs, high school level games.
Thank you for reminding me about that. You know, I was thinking more from right now with COVID. It's just so hard to find basketball. But in terms of the actual, you know, if you're a pro, semi-pro, recreational, high school player, college player, we try to find games for you. If you're in college, we understand that with the NCAA rules, you don't want to mess up your eligibility. So we have games for two type of college players: the college player that is leaving, that's still in college, that needs to find exposure games, and the college player that needs to meet the NCAA rules. But then on the recreational level, we're going to make it really fun for you. You know, I love recreational basketball, and I feel like we want to give recreational basketball players a better platform to get some exposure, you know, fun exposure. You know, so it's great. I'm really excited. It's basketball, and it's, you know, I love basketball. So I'm so into it. I got a great team, and I'm excited for it. So definitely visit us and, you know, send us an email, register early, because we're giving 2,000 people access in June. I'm sorry. First week in June, the first 2,000. And then, you know, midway through June, we're going to open it up for everybody. So thank you for that.
Well, Mehta, listen, I want to say thank you as well. I appreciate you doing this. And look, I think we've been talking now for over 20 minutes or so, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. And I know there's a lot of listeners out there, especially in Los Angeles, listening on the app, that respect your game, respect what you did for the Lakers, and respect your career. So we wish you nothing but the best, all right?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Good luck to everyone.
Thank you, man. All right, that's Mehta World Peace right there. The man. Gosh, I could have gone another hour with Mehta. What a good dude. What a great, great person. And I can't compliment enough how much I appreciate his time. Okay, Scott Gleason from the USA Today. Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999. That's, of course, been a conversation about if the Bulls all came back, would they still be able to have that success that they were having and win their fifth NBA championship? Their seventh NBA championship, fourth in a row, would they have been able to do that? So Scott Gleason from USA Today coming up next day right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.